hi there, check out this video. So there's a Coke can and there's a spill, a Coke spill. So the instructor here says, I spilled my Coke on the table. How would you throw it away and bring me something to help clean? So the robot here forms a plan as it goes about it. First, it says, I would find a Coke can. Then second, I would pick up the Coke can. You can see it has done it. Third, I would go to the trash can. Fourth, I would put down the Coke can. Note that it puts down the Coke can next to the trash can, not in the trash can, because the robot is environmentally friendly and wants to preserve the can for the recycling bin for cans. And, you know, it doesn't belong in the trash. Good little robot. So next it says, I will find a sponge. I will pick up the sponge and then will it clean the Coke? No, it will not clean up the spill. It will actually give the sponge to the human to clean up the spill, because that's how the future is going to be. The robots, they're not going to take our, you know, people always think the robots will take our dirty jobs. They'll take all the, like these tasks like cleaning and doing things. No. They'll abuse us, the humans, to do that. They'll just throw down our stuff. They'll throw down the sponge and be like, here, human, clean up your own mess. Well, if that's a future that you look forward to too, then join me in today's paper. We're going to look at do as I can, not as I say, grounding language in robotic affordances by researchers at robotics at Google and Everyday Robots. So as you saw in this video, what happened here is that from a simple instruction that the instructor gave, this I spilled a Coke can, you know, please help me find something to clean and throw it away. The robot formed a plan. The plan you can see at the very end here, you can see it developing in the bottom. At the very end, you can see the full plan. I'm not sure if I can make this bottom thing go away. In essence, it makes a plan, like it always plans the next step, or at least it determines what the next step should be. And then it actually also does it. So this is a good example of a grounded language model, or also an example of embodied intelligence. This work connects large language models and the knowledge that is inherent to large language models with the skills of robots that act in the real world, which is really cool. And usually these two things are quite disjoint, but this could be really powerful. So we're going to look at this paper. I also have already recorded an interview with the authors. This for time reasons, we did it the other way around this time. So I don't want to take away too much on the paper review right here. I'll tell you what the method is about, how it works, and I'll leave the rest to the authors, who are extremely competent. And I learned a lot in the interview. I hope you will too. In any case, the interview will be out tomorrow if you're watching this the day it comes out, which obviously you do. How do you find new papers? Frankly, machine learning has become unbearable. There are thousands of new papers each month, and to keep the overview, we need good tools. Today's sponsor is Zeta Alpha, which is a search and recommendation engines for papers. This is really powerful. For example, here I've searched for today's paper, SayCan. You can immediately see that not only do I get the paper itself, but I also get an aggregation of all the social media mentions of this paper. Now, it doesn't stop there. With one click, I can find related papers. These are not only papers that are cited, but these are semantically similar papers. This is powered by neural search, which is really cool. I can further now add this paper to my tags, and what that will do is it will build categories of papers and then serve me recommendations that semantically fit those categories. This is really powerful. Essentially, this is a newsfeed of papers that is personalized to you specifically. Just recently, Zeta Alpha has released their own PDF reader. This is really strong right out of the gate. Not only does it let you read the paper, you know, but also it shows you important information about a paper and it lets you take notes. Now, what I find by far the coolest thing is that you can actually use one of these notes to search for other papers. So whenever you find something within a paper that seems interesting, you can use that particular piece of text and go search for other papers that might deal with the same topic. Sign up now to Zeta Alpha. There is a free tier, and the pro tier is actually free for students, for academics. But in case you are not one of these, the promo code Yannick will get you 20% off the pro subscription. The authors here state that if you try to ask a language model to clean a spill, as they just did in the video, so if you ask a language model to clean a spill, it might result in a reasonable narrative. As we've all come to know, the large language models like GPT-3 or so, they give very convincing outputs. So when you ask them, how would you clean up a spill? They'll give you a reasonable plan to clean up a spill, but the authors say may not be applicable to a particular agent, such as a robot that needs to perform this task in a particular environment. They have a bunch of examples right here. So I spilled my drink, how can you help, is up here. GPT-3 would say something like, you could try using a vacuum cleaner. Well, GPT-3 has no idea of A, whether there is a vacuum cleaner in this environment, or B, whether the robot or whatever agent is capable of executing that action, so is capable of handling a vacuum cleaner, because it's not the easiest thing to use. You have to go get it, plug it in, and so on. There's moving parts. Similarly, models like Lambda and Flan, of course, they're made for different things, but still they will pay no attention to what is actually possible in the environment. Now, you can get around this a little bit by prompt engineering, telling the model what's possible in the current world, but it will only get you so far. So we need something else. We need something better than this. And that's where this system comes in. So they say what they want to do, they want to provide a real world grounding by means of pre-trained skills. And this leads to a situation where you only consider actions that are both feasible and contextually appropriate. So these two things need to be brought together. The language model supplies the high-level semantic knowledge about the task, and the robot itself, or the policy in the robot, provides the feasibility of the tasks to be executed. So the two things are brought together contextually, appropriate from contextually appropriate from the language model side, and feasibility from the robot side. So how are they going to do this? They're going to combine, as I said, large language models with policy or value functions, let's say, value functions, and then they execute a policy. There's a bit more explanation right here, but I think I've said many things already. We'll get to the meat right here. They say, let's say we have a robot. The robot might be, or in this case is, equipped with a repertoire of learned skills for basic atomic behaviors. These skills are capable of low-level perception and control. So one of these atomic behaviors is, for example, if you remember from the video, pick up something, like pick up the Coke can. That's an atomic behavior. You can teach the robot to pick up a Coke can in isolation. It can do it many times. You can train some imitation learning or reinforcement learning, or you can even hard code that particular policy. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you can train it in isolation. It is an atomic action. And these atomic actions can then be chained together to form a sequence of actions and execute a plan. Right. So the atomic actions are going to be supplied by the robot, and then the sequencing of the atomic actions is going to be determined by the language model. They say if we can simply make the large language model aware of the available and feasible repertoire of skills, this can provide it with an awareness of both the agent's capabilities and the current state of the environment. So if they have a large language model, many people use large language models to sample, which means that they would input something like, you know, I is capitalized, I spilled a drink, ... And then they would let the language model generate stuff right here. And then they would try to interpret this stuff. We've seen this in other paper, and there are situations where it can work, especially if you put like some reasonable prompt in front of it. But the approaches have been largely to just let the model generate some stuff and then try to map that stuff, whatever comes here, into the action space of the robot. But that is not always possible. Instead, what this paper does is it says, well, we can also use the language model not to generate, but simply to compute the likelihood of certain inputs. So I spilled a drink, and then let's say I just have 5 actions at my disposal. All the robot can do is these 5 actions. So I would, or let's say it says, I spilled a drink, I will, and then clean up. I will go away. I will eat pizza. I will, and so on, right? So there are these different actions that the robot has available to do. And these correspond obviously directly to these atomic actions. So cleaning up something would be an atomic action that you could train in isolation. Going away would be an atomic action. You can hard code or you can pathfind your way out the door, right? Eat pizza. Maybe these are even too high level that the way that I describe right now, but just imagine these are low level actions. And all we have to do with the language model is we simply have to compute the likelihood of each. So what's the likelihood of the sentence, I spilled a drink, I will clean up, right? And then I compare that to the likelihood of the sentence, I spilled a drink, I will go away. And then I compare that to the likelihood of the sentence, I spilled a drink, I will eat pizza. So for every continuation here in my repertoire, I will get a likelihood number. And that represents how contextually appropriate is that particular skill in this case. So how much does the language model think this skill would be useful right here? Now, there's obviously an issue in how you formulate these things right here. Depending on how you formulate them, they might become more or less likely. However, I think the authors here work around this simply by the fact that the skills that they have, they are so separated from each other, there is not really too much of an issue with that. But that's kind of what my concern was when I read this. But in essence, it's a good idea, I think. So you simply, for every single, wow, this all became orange. For every single continuation, you get a number, which is the likelihood of that thing. That's what they say right here. You know, instead of using the large language model to interpret an instruction, we can use it to score the likelihood that an individual skill makes progress towards completing the high-level instruction. Furthermore, and that's where the second part comes in, if each skill has an accompanying affordance function that quantifies how likely it is to succeed from the current state, such as a learned value function, its value can be used to weigh the skill's likelihood. It's best if we go down here to the diagrams of how this works so you can see how this fits together. This part here is the part we just described. Let's say I'm in a situation. This is the prompt that I put in. How would you put an apple on the table? You prompt the language model with this thing right here, which has a prompt engineering part. So you can see there are a bunch of examples of instruction and then a sequence of steps. And again, instruction, a sequence of steps. Here comes again, instruction, and then here you'd get a sequence of steps. However, instead of generating, you'd simply score the likelihood of each of the skills that you have available. Find an apple, find a Coke, find a sponge, pick up an apple, pick up a Coke, yada, 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 until go to the counter. Each one of these skills gets a likelihood number assigned to it. That's part one. Part two is where you train the robot for these basic skills, these atomic skills. Here you can see one of these training stations where you can simply teach the robot to do things such as picking up an apple or picking up a Red Bull can. Now, what you have to do is not only teach the robot a skill, but also train a value function for it. If you do something like A2C, reinforcement learning, you get the value function directly out of that algorithm. If not, you have to somehow come up with a value function that makes sense. In any case, what you want to do is train a policy and a value function. And the value function is important because it tells you from a given input, by the way, the low-level policy has the picture here as an input. Well, obviously, the language model doesn't. Now, I believe with Flamingo by DeepMind that just came out today, that might actually change. But the low-level policy has the image available. So the value function, given this picture right here, can tell you pretty quickly my skill that's called pick up the Red Bull can. I can execute that policy and I can probably make it happen. That's why the value is relatively large here. Also for the pick up the apple action, the value function tells you, you know, given this picture right here, I can probably make that happen. However, when it's pick up the water bottle, pick up the bag of chips and so on, there is no water bottle. So the value function very accurately says, no, I cannot make that happen if I execute that policy. So the value function gives you inherently a score of, given the current observation, how likely am I to succeed at a particular skill, which is exactly what we want, because that's the second part of our puzzle. So on the right here, you see another example where none of these pickup skills, picking up skills, have any value because there are no objects. But in this case, maybe other actions would score very highly in the value function. For example, go and find a sponge. Like, I can always go and find something, right? And if I know there's a sponge somewhere, I'll probably succeed. So in any case, this value function, now we can combine. You can see we got a number for each action from the language model. How likely is that action to progress towards the goal? We got a number for each action from the value function, which is how likely is this action to succeed given the current observation. And all we do now is essentially multiply the two things together. If they are log likelihoods, we obviously want to add them. But in any case, we combine the two numbers and then we choose the skill that is the best trade-off between what makes progress towards a goal and what is feasible currently. Here is an example. The input is, how would you put an apple on the table? Like an apple. So we query the language model with this prompt here and the prompt engineering we've seen before. This is not displayed here, but it is the case. And the top actions that the language model gives are pick up an apple. So you see that's the highest action that we have. Place the apple, and only at third instance, find an apple. However, the language model has no clue about the current state, right? And that's where the value function come in. So this is the current observation. We ask the value function which skills are, you know, doable in the current environment, in the current observation. So the value function say, well, finding an apple, finding a Coke, finding a sponge, these are pretty high. I could do these. I could also go to the table. I could also go to the counter, right? These are fairly doable. However, I cannot place an apple or place a Coke because I don't have a Coke in my gripper. I can also not pick up an apple or pick up a Coke because I don't see them anywhere in the picture right here. So even though pick up the apple was scored highest by the language model, it is now severely downranked because the value function for this policy isn't very confident that it will succeed if you execute that right now. And therefore, the action that is chosen is the best trade-off, which is find an apple. Then you can see or not see, but this is represented here, that after this is done, the policy is executed. So the find an apple policy is executed, the find an apple action is added to the prompt, and then the whole process repeats. But instead of asking for the first step, this whole thing is now the prompt, including the instruction, and we simply ask the language model for the second step, and the input to the value function is now the current updated picture. So here you see it succeeded in finding an apple. And now hopefully the second step, if we go through the same process again, is going to be the pick up an apple action. Because, well, that might already be high by the language model, but also the value function, given that there's an apple in the picture, should now say, yes, I can probably succeed at that. So that's the whole issue or the whole process here. This is repeated until the end. This is the say can method. They do, like, what is really impressive is just the amount of effort and work that went into designing these systems, training these systems, evaluating these systems. They have different areas here on the left. This is like a kitchen. On the right is a different environment. They have these training stations. They collect so much data from human operators and so on. This is, if you saw that there are a lot of authors, this is because this was or seems like a quite big project. But yeah, it's definitely worth it. It's cool to have something in the real world. There are definitely a bunch of criticisms I have right here, which I also brought up to the authors, and I thought they responded quite admirably and quite well. The one criticism I already raised was that if, you know, it obviously depends on how you spell. So what you have is this bank of skills on the right-hand side here. Now, in order for the language model to score them, they need to actually be formulated as a piece of language. And now it all of a sudden depends on how you formulate that. For example, we know that longer queries always have kind of lower likelihood because they have more tokens. Also, how you phrase things is differently and so on. So it is quite tricky. And I believe if you go into more actions, maybe the robot has two actions that are very close together in terms of semantics or in terms of wording, the model might get confused more easily. Second of all, currently, there is no consideration as to whether an action succeeds or not. So you simply assume that once you execute a low-level policy, that the robot's going to succeed at executing that low-level policy. That's why, so if it doesn't succeed, and a lot of these things are still pretty hard, then there's very little recovery. The value functions might still give you, let's say you find an apple, you try to pick up the apple, but you don't manage to do it, right? The pick up an apple instruction will be pick up an apple, will be in your prompt. So now the value function would probably say, well, I could pick up the apple again because it again sees an apple because you failed to pick it up. But the likelihood that the language model is going to say pick up an apple again after it just did is quite lower. Now, I mean, coincidentally, as we know language models, if you go on here repeating the sentence pick up an apple, at some point actually becomes pretty likely given the language model, but hopefully we won't get there. So there are quite a number of weaknesses yet in this setup. The other weakness is just the limitations of hardware. These robots, this video was 10x speed, so this was 10 times speed, and still it's quite slow. As you can see, it can't do many things, like it cannot wipe itself with the sponge and so on. It needs to navigate around slowly. But still, these are, I think, limitations that can be overcome. Look how it like carefully grabs. And yeah, in any case, there are also a lot of good things right here. And I want to highlight that because what I really like about this is that these two things are disjoint. So the language model side on the left-hand side and these value functions, this policy bank, these atomic actions, they are disjoint. The language model is not trained. It is a frozen language model. It can be trained completely in isolation to this system. All you have to do is get it to score the likelihoods of some actions. Likewise, the bank on the right here, it is completely in fact, not the bank itself, but each individual skill, each individual entry is trained completely isolated from all the others. All you need to add a new skill right here is a policy that can execute that skill at any given moment, and a value function that estimates, given some state input, that estimates how likely the policy is to succeed if this action, if this policy were to be executed at this particular moment. That's all you need. You can add this to your bank of actions, and you don't have to retrain anything in this system. It is directly useful. So you could think of shipping out these robots essentially and then upgrading the language model so they are better at planning stuff. Or you could just ship new skills, right? It's like, well, our coders have developed some new skill for the robot, right? You just amend it. You just put it in. There's no, you don't need to update the full system. This is not an end-to-end system. And usually in deep learning, we're quite end-to-end happy. But in this case, I think this is a really good case where modularity is really the key. I think this goes so much beyond just robots and grounding in the real world. But to have a model like on the left that has knowledge about, you know, semantic knowledge, high level knowledge, and so on, sequential knowledge, essentially, to provide that with a set of modular pieces of external things that it can use, I think that idea is powerful way beyond just the robotics use case. But obviously the robotics use case is quite a cool one, so I don't want to discourage that. We in the interview, we go into all of this, we go into the experimental results as well. The experimental results, they're not perfect. However, they are quite impressive in that the robots, they are able to plan across many, many time steps. They're able to chain these actions. You can see on the right here, that's maybe too pixelish, but these are like 17 of these atomic actions that are done in sequence. And, you know, that's quite impressive. These episodes are very, very long. And if you think you can get to that in the real world with sort of a reinforcement learning approach, then good luck. So the success rates are among the 70%-ish of plan success rate, 61% execution success rate, which the plan success rate, I believe, is if the plan itself makes sense, and the execution success rate is if also the policies all execute correctly. And you can see this is very different for the different test sets. But all in all, it's very impressive. Here are a bunch of more examples of these low-level atomic skills being practiced and the value functions being evaluated, and the language model likelihoods in blue as well. So I don't want to make this artificially too long. As I said, interviews coming up. I hope you like explanations like these, even if they are a bit shorter, and I'll see you around. Check out the paper, subscribe, stay hydrated. Bye-bye.